Chapter 5. Teddy. School is the worst thing in my life by far. I have to get up early, and in North Sandwich, that never bothered me much, but here in Boston, it bothers me very much, because I have to get washed and dressed, and my hair must be pulled back, and I have to be clean and presentable, according to stepmother. And when I used to get up in North Sandwich, it was to watch the sun break over the trees, not to go to school in a tight dress. What a bother. Back in North Sandwich, there were always jobs that needed doing, like collecting eggs or going for milk or tackling some weeds or helping Josephine with the laundry. But here in Boston, we don't have any chickens, and stepmother sends our laundry out. There's no front garden. Our front door steps right onto the cobbled street. I don't have these jobs anymore because stepmother warns I'm going to behave like a lady, and ladies don't go round in overalls whacking at weeds. Miss Elms, our teacher, is forever admonishing me. She says I have the brains, but I don't apply myself. Well, truth be told, I don't think she applies herself to teaching. She's terribly boring, and that's why I hate school and all its rules and rhyming by rote. The thing is, I do like books. Whenever Papa went on the road, he used to bring me here some penny... Let's try that again. Whenever Papa went on the road, he used to bring me home some penny paperbacks, and as I got better at reading and started moving on to more difficult texts, he said I was well ahead of my age. He said I was better read than him, and even better with figures, too. To be a man in business, you need to know your figures, so this was really saying something. My favorite books so far are Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens and Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, which is a very long book, but I got through it all right, because it's all about what it means to be good or wicked. Last week, Papa came back from Chicago with a book so long it's two books by Alexandre Dumas, something about a count. I have yet to start it, but I'm not sure if I'm going to like it, as it's set in France, and I'm not sure how I feel about the French. Miss Elms is always drumming French grammar into us, and it very much puts me off. When we lived in North Sandwich, Papa used to sit us down round the fire in the evenings and tell us his own stories. He had a great many stories about my great-grandfather on my mother's side. He was a justice of the peace and the only magistrate in the district, and was known as the Squire. He lived in North Sandwich from around the year 1690 to 1750, which is a very long time for a man, and he had accumulated considerable cash money. As there were no bonds, mortgages, or stocks back then, he wasn't quite sure what to do with it all. He decided he would like to invest it, and would lend it out to people with interest. If he heard of anyone who was building a new house or a vessel, he would walk 20 or 30 miles to see if he could lend them some money. What he could not lend, he kept in the house in an oak chest. At that time, they were having a lot of trouble with witches all over New England and some of the other colonies, too. The test was to throw suspected persons, who were almost always women, into a pond. If they could swim, they were witches for sure and left in deep water to fatigue and drown. If they could not swim, they hauled them out and, I suppose, apologized. I often wondered if I could be a witch, for I am a very good swimmer. There were different charms to keep the witches away, as it was widely known that witches were money mad and would fly away with all of it if they could get a hold of it. Every Christmas, the squire would kill a hog, and while it was warm, hang it up on a beam and drop all his money down through the hog, one piece at a time. This was supposed to keep it witch-proof for a year. Witches were never known to fly away with money that had been treated in that way. One way to know if a witch had been in a house was if the brine spoiled in a barrel of pork. It would go all rancid and frothy, and that is what happened to the squire's wife one day when she visited the cellar to look in the barrel. They knew then that a witch had been in the house and was after their money. So the squire took all their money from the oak chest, put it in a canvas bag, and carried it out to the woods along the track road, where they hauled their kindling from and buried it. When he came back, he said he'd bury the money 3 feet deep where the witches could not find it. For a long time, their minds were easy in regard to the money. When the squire died, he died very suddenly, and he'd never told anyone where the money was buried. To this day, in North Sandwich, people dig holes along the road in search of the treasure. We call them money holes. Papa says that in our family, we have a habit of earning lots of money and losing it again. It happened to him, too, after Mama died. He'd been doing very well in business, and then things took a turn and went down, and that's why we had to let go of our help, and things in the house began to get worse, and Josephine got all agitated. Now Papa's luck was on the rise again, for we have a fine house here in Boston, and Stepmother seems to have plenty of money to spend in Jordan Marshes. I hope our luck stays and we don't lose it again. The squire was known to be very lucky in business at times and could strike it rich, even when the odds were against him. Papa told us that he once agreed to insure a man who had two vessels that had not returned home from the West Indies. It was presumed that they'd been wrecked or captured by pirates. The man said if the squire insured him, he could have the second vessel should it appear back, and this is indeed what happened. But the squire, being only a farmer with no nautical experience, did not know what to do with the ship. He asked his friends, and some would advise one thing, some another. The night before he went to Boston to see to the ship, he met an old sailor in our local country store, and on hearing of his inexperience, as a joke, the old sailor told him to load her with warming pans. The squire did not realize this was a joke, for he was not to know the West Indies was so warm that they had resolutely no need for warming pans in their beds. The long-handled pans were filled with ashes and coals from the fire and placed between the sheets on cold winter nights, something regularly used in North Sandwich and Boston. And so the squire purchased as many warming pans as he could find and loaded them onto the ship, to the great amusement of the sailors and merchants who delivered them to the dock. When the planters came aboard the vessel in the West Indies to see what was for sale, they were quite taken with the warming pans. What fine things they would be to dip our molasses with and fill the barrels! And they bought every warming pan on board, and so the squire made a tidy profit. Papa called it the squire's luck. Now, here in Boston, Papa doesn't seem to have much time to tell stories. In fact, I'm not at all sure if he's even sat us down once since we've been here. I suppose that's why he brings me the books. He was always too busy, it seems, with Stepmother organizing grand dinners for him. They eat dinner alone each evening at the dining table, while we are fed our suppers early and told to go to bed. Josephine does not stand for this, for she is not a child, and she is often out herself to supper. I miss our nights around the fire, though, just the four of us. My last story of Papa's that I will tell here, for I do not know what I will do with this diary, or even if I will keep these pages that I have written, for my thoughts change all the time, and I do not wish Stepmother to find it and read it, is about the Declaration of Independence, a story that Papa swears is true. He told us that when Thomas Jefferson was in the declaration writing business, he received a hurry-up order to have the declaration written for the printer at 4 o'clock. Jefferson duly wrote it out and gave it to his clerk to copy and then went to lunch. The original document read, "All men are not, K-N-O-T, created equal," and when the clerk who was copying it out came to the word not, he said out loud, "I don't think not is spelled with a K." Now, as this was before Noah Webster's time, he had no dictionary to refer to. There proceeded a conversation in the office. N-O-T, not, said the other clerk, but not K-N-O-T, that is spelled with a K. They got into an argument, which descended into a heated exchange, where the two men squared up to each other. Right at that moment, Jefferson returned and came into the office and roared, "Cut it out! And get to work on that declaration. The printer must have it by 4 o'clock. The clerk, not used to hearing such slang from Mr. Jefferson, took him at his word and thought he meant cut out the word, and so he did, and the declaration forevermore read, "All men are created equal." Papa said if Mr. Jefferson meant to say all men are created with equal rights, then he agreed with him, but he had a poor way of saying it. I am not quite sure how I feel about people being born equal. Two people can be of the same parents and yet have very different minds and outlooks. How can everyone be equal? Right now I am looking forward to summer and the end of the school term. I am so tired of these inside walls. The best day of the summer is the 4th of July. It is all Willie's friends talk about, now even in April. We will need all our pocket money to buy firecrackers, pinwheels, Roman candles, and skyrockets. Willie says one yellow cracker is worth two red ones, and this gives me a notion to try my hand at some trading business, even if I'm perhaps a little too old for firecrackers. Oh, I have found myself in some trouble. It is of my own doing. However, the involvement of stepmother caused much of the ruckus, in my opinion, and I have truly turned against her now. It turns out I will miss the 4th of July in Boston. I will have to give all my fireworks to Willie before I leave. This has me a little annoyed, truth be told, but as Papa is still so angry with me, I have to swallow it. There were two incidents that led to this situation, only one of which I am quite ashamed of. The first, and the most shameful, was an incident with the cobbler, Mr. Nail. My shoe needed mending, and I went to his shop to leave it to be fixed. Papa had given me 10 cents to pay for it, and I'd laid the money on the stairs for some reason and forgot where I left it. Stepmother found it and gave it back to my father, unbeknownst to me. I told Mr. Nail that I would pay him when I returned for the shoe and went home in search of the coin. That evening, Papa asked me if I had paid Mr. Nail, and not wanting to admit my carelessness, I said, "Yes, sir." Papa said, "Did you pay him? I gave you 10 cents, and yet your mother found that on the stairs." Papa has a habit of calling stepmother mother, which only Trixie tolerates. I said, "Maybe you had 2 coins and dropped one on the stairs?" My father replied, "I think you are telling a fib, but before giving you a whipping, I shall go and ask Mr. Nail if you paid him like you said." I went up to my room and sat on my bed to study some way out of the difficulty. I had no money. Neither Willie nor Henry had any that I could borrow. Josephine was away visiting the Hartfords, where she seemed to spend a lot of time lately. I looked through my trunk to see if I had anything I could sell for 10 cents, but there was nothing. Mr. Nail had to be paid before 9 o'clock the next morning if I was to escape a thrashing. All that night I couldn't sleep, thinking over the problem, but as dawn broke, an idea came to me. I would do as many debtors had done and resort to paying a high interest for an extension of time. I had learned from the squire. Interest on a loan was the way to go. I would go to Mr. Nail and tell him that when my father called to say I'd paid the 10 cents and to let it run until next week, when I would surely figure out a way to make some money, I would pay him 15 cents instead of 10 for his trouble. Well, Papa did call in, and when Mr. Nail said the bill had been paid, Papa was flummoxed, for the coin that he had given to me had a small scratch on it, and he knew that I had certainly lost the original coin. He knew that I was fibbing in some way, and this greatly displeased him. He didn't like to think he'd been outsmarted. That evening I was called to the parlor, where stepmother sat with her arms folded, and Papa stood in front of the fireplace with his arms behind his back. How, they wanted to know, had I paid the money to Mr. Nail? Unable to get myself out of the bind, I repeated that I had paid it with father's coin. Papa produced the coin and said he knew that I was lying, and still I would not admit the truth. Papa said lying to one's parents was the greatest offense there was, for if there was no trust within the family, then my ethics and morals did not stand up to scrutiny at all. These words greatly saddened me, and I longed to tell the truth. I wanted Papa to have the utmost trust in me, but I did not know how to get myself out of the fix. They dismissed me and said they would think on a punishment appropriate of the crime. The very next day, my examination results arrived from the schoolhouse. It turned out that I had failed French. How I hate that language. And Latin, an utter waste of time. Miss Elms remarked that I had not put the effort in. The truth was, I could have done better. I did understand more than I let on, and perhaps in a sort of protest I had not put any effort in, for I felt Miss Elms in her weak attempt at teaching made everything boring and inane, and half the class was asleep most of the time. Why let her think she was a good tutor? Stepmother left the results envelope on the high mantelpiece in the parlor, and again, for a second night in a row, I was called to stand in front of them in shame. "I know you are better than this," Papa declared. "I know you have brains, Teddy. Why do you not use them?" Papa said it appeared that I was lazy, that ever since coming to Boston I was languishing and they could stand it no longer. I wanted to say that ever since we came to Boston I had barely seen Father, and perhaps it was him who was languishing. But I knew if I said that I would get a whipping right there and then, so I kept my mouth closed. Stepmother said I had become insolent. She said I was no longer a child and could not be treated as one. She would no longer stand for my cheek. "I am not cheeky," I cried. But Papa raised his voice and said this was an exact example of what stepmother meant. "I will not have an insolent daughter," he said, and they dismissed me again and ordered me to stay in my bedroom. I knew then that they were discussing something very serious about me. 2 days later, I was called for a third time to the parlor. By now, I had become used to being reprimanded. Papa looked solemn. Stepmother looked smug. "Teddy," said my father, "we have found your behavior this week to be truly reprehensible. It is simply not acceptable. We do not care for your demeanor nor the change we see in you." I thought that I hadn't changed that much. I still felt like me, the same Teddy that I was in North Sandwich. It was stepmother who had changed father, not the other way around. "We have telegrammed your uncle in Chicago, and he has agreed to take you for the summer. This will give you plenty of time to think upon your actions. A summer of hard manual work will show you just how important it is to apply yourself to your education if you want to do any better for yourself." Chicago? On my uncle's farm? If this was meant as a punishment, it must be stepmother's doing, and the best punishment I could have been given. I knew that my uncle had two sons, but I could not really remember my cousins, nor could I remember my uncle and his wife, for that matter. But a farm, a whole summer spent out of the city. I nodded my head solemnly, accepting my punishment. I thought wickedly how stepmother wasn't playing the game well. What an adventure. "We will travel on Thursday," said Papa, "for I will be driving cattle back from Chicago, and it will suit then." Traveling with Papa! Finally, my hopes had come true. "I understand," I said, bowing my head and looking very forlorn. "I apologize for the trouble I have caused." When Josephine heard, she said stepmother wouldn't be happy till she'd packed all of us off. But I thought that maybe lying and doing poorly in exams was not a bad way to get what you wanted. Who says the truth wins? A summer in Chicago, working on a farm. What luck! What great Ellis luck!